Hello and welcome to another episode of Nonprofit Vision. This is your host, Greg Nielsen. I'm the president and CEO of Nielsen Training and Consulting, where we work with nonprofit organizations around the country, primarily in the areas of board excellence, strategy and strategic planning, and organizational development. I'm happy to welcome onto the podcast today. This is a topic I've been looking to cover for a long time, and I have a guest that I'm really excited about today. His name is Gene Takagi. Gene is the principal at the NEO Law Group. Gene, welcome to the podcast today.
Thanks so much, Greg. It's great to be here.
I appreciate you and your work, and I know I have followed along with a lot of the great resources that you put out through the NEO Law Group, and you have the For Purpose blog as well. Is that correct?
It's actually the Nonprofit Law Blog.
Nonprofit Law Blog as well. Gene, tell us a little bit about your background and the work that you do in the sector.
Sure. I'm a nonprofit corporate and tax attorney that works exclusively with nonprofit organizations. And over the last 15 years or so, it's been about 800, 900 organizations we've had a chance to work with, mostly public charities, but quite a few private foundations and social welfare organizations as well. We have the pleasure of working with a lot of groups doing fantastic work on governance, on organizational structuring, on fiscal sponsorship, lobbying, unrelated business activities, and an array of nonprofit corporate and tax matters.
And that's a great segue into our topic today, which is, as Gene alluded to, fiscal sponsorship. So fiscal sponsorship, candidly, is an area that I, as a consultant, have been doing a lot more work recently in, and obviously have learned a lot about, and there are all sorts of considerations, pros and cons. But Gene, if you could, maybe at the outset, just define for those who may not be as invested in fiscal sponsorship, what do we mean by fiscal sponsorship in the nonprofit sector?
Sure. So let me start out, because I'm a lawyer, I have to say, it's not a legally defined term in any like code or statute or regulation that I'm aware of. But it's commonly used to describe a relationship that allows an individual or group to be able to work with a charity acting as a fiscal sponsor to raise charitable funds and grants for a project without having to start their own nonprofit and getting their own 501c3. Determination. So kind of an easy way into incubating a project or working on the program stuff and fundraising and not so much on the back end administration.
And so just so everyone listening is clear, there's a lot of terms that we throw around when we talk about fiscal sponsorship. And just want to make sure everyone's clear on a couple of the common ones. When we talk about a sponsor, what do we mean by a sponsor?
So the sponsor is an existing organization that's a public charity, and they're going to exercise control and discretion over all of the fundraising for the project. And in certain models of fiscal sponsorship, they're going to actually own the project. So all the things that are happening in the project, all the assets that are owned by the project are the sponsor's assets. They're the sponsor's liabilities. And that's in the most common form of fiscal sponsorship, known as comprehensive, or some people call it Model A fiscal sponsorship. So that's the most common form. There are other forms, though, where that's slightly different.
And then another term that we use is project. And by project, are we simply referring to a group that doesn't yet or doesn't have 501c3 status, but is still looking to perform some charitable mission in the community?
So that's how it's used colloquially or commonly. It's not technically right. Let me say that the group that's wanting to form the project is kind of the external entity outside of the fiscal sponsor. And sometimes they'll enter into an agreement with the fiscal sponsor as a committee or as an unincorporated association that enters into the contract as a sort of quasi-legal entity, depending upon what state you're in. The project itself, in a comprehensive fiscal sponsorship model, the most common type that I just referred to before, is internal to the fiscal sponsor. It belongs to the fiscal sponsor, so it doesn't have any outside legal existence. But you're right, oftentimes people collapse the two words as one, so the project is both the external people and the internal project. But again, just to make sure we're clear on everything, The external party that's entering into the contract is one thing, and in a comprehensive fiscal sponsorship, the project is internal, belongs to the fiscal sponsor.
So if I am an individual who has a vision for the community, I want to perform a service, I have a program that I want to bring to the community. Obviously, one route is to go and form a 501c3, and another we're saying is what we're referring to as fiscal sponsorship, which is partnering with an entity that already has that 501c3 status. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So they get the benefit, or you would get the benefit in your example, of not having to form your own nonprofit organization getting 501c3 status, but being able to form this partnership, if you will, with the fiscal sponsor so that you're running a program within the fiscal sponsor. And the nice thing about fiscal sponsorship and how it differs from just, you know, being hired by an organization and running their own program is fiscal sponsorship will give you exit rights. So it allows you to take that project that belongs to the fiscal sponsor, but subject to the agreement that you can take that project if you're unhappy, or if you create your own nonprofit down the road, this was an incubation, and you decide 2 or 3 years later that you want to run it as a separate independent nonprofit. The fiscal sponsorship agreement, if well crafted, and you have to be careful about that, will allow you to exit and transfer that project to either another fiscal sponsor who you're more happy with, or an independent nonprofit with 501c3 status that you later form.
So I like to start with the why. So if I was an individual and I had this idea or vision for the community, if you were advising that individual as they try to weigh the pros and the cons of going for 501c3 status or exploring fiscal sponsorship, what are some of the pros that you see for that individual
in terms of fiscal sponsorship? Yeah, it's a great question. As many people come up to us and go, where do we start? You know, yes. How do we make that decision? And I think one of the things that you have to think about is kind of where your strengths are as a founding individual or as a group of funders or founders, and say, are we all about just fundraising and running the programs, or are we all good about all of the administrative stuff that has to happen as well? All of the tax filings, getting insurance, taking minutes of board meetings, all of those other additional things that, you know, any new startup is going to have to think about. If that's not in the strength or not within the desired activities of that founding group, well, fiscal sponsorship might be a good option for you to think about. Other reasons why is the speed of being able to get 501c3 status from the IRS is right now, you know, as we're talking in my own experience, it's taking about 6 to 8 months if you file the form 1023. So this is not for the tiny projects that are under $50,000 a year filing the form 1023 EZ, which has some other problems. That's another show.
we could talk about that on a whole
But if you file the form 1023, which is the longer application with detailed narratives and descriptions of your board members and a projected budget and all that, probably taking about 6 to 8 months on average for the IRS to get back to you with a determination. But let's say you have an opportunity to help something right now and you want to get going quickly. Well, fiscal sponsorship works really well, because if you can find the right fiscal sponsor, and that's, again, that's something very important to find the right one. But if you find the right one, they may be able to approve the fiscal sponsorship of your project within weeks or months, or even on rare occasion, if you've got this just fabulous, fabulous idea and you've got committed sources of funding, even days. So the speed is important as well. Fiscal sponsorship also works well, and I mentioned the word incubation before, but it also works well to pilot or test something. So you might say, let's see if this flies, and maybe it doesn't. And if you form your own nonprofit and it doesn't fly, then you have to go through all the costs and administrative headaches of dissolving that nonprofit as well. So a lot of money spent on the formation and a lot of time waiting and then dissolving it. And that may all happen over the first 2 years. And you could have just got it fiscally sponsored, testing it. And if it works, use it as the incubation and create the nonprofit at that point and transfer it over, versus you know, again, going through all the burdens of having to dissolve it. If it doesn't work, if a fiscally sponsored project doesn't work, you just terminate the agreement. The fiscal sponsor is happy, you know, and they say, thank you very much. We had a nice little run. It didn't work. We learned something. Let's just move on.
Absolutely. And I like the way you frame that, focusing on strengths and where do you as an individual have your strengths in this early incubation period. One of the questions that I always ask individuals who come to me with that issue as they're trying to decide, start a new nonprofit versus fiscal sponsorship, is where do you get your energy from? You know, do you get energy from building a business, as you call it, all of the infrastructure and the administration, or is your energy really from running your program, interacting with kids or animals or whoever the beneficiaries of your program are? I think that's such an important consideration for people.
Yeah, and I think one of the misconceptions of fiscal sponsorship is that if you let this other public charity fiscal sponsor own your project, as we're talking about the comprehensive model of fiscal sponsorship, that they're going to somehow squash all of your ideas and tell you what to do. But choosing the right fiscal sponsor, again, they're going to be pretty hands-off so long as you're complying with the law and consistent with their mission, which is usually going to be broader than your mission. But they're usually not going to be the technical experts at saying, you know, you should run your program this way. So again, choosing the right fiscal sponsor is pivotal in this, but they're going to largely be hands-off. They're going to want to see reporting. They're going to want to have comfort that you're doing it lawfully. But it's really, for many, many projects or founders, I recommend fiscal sponsorship as a starting point.
I do as well. And we talked about the why for the individual. Let's flip over to the sponsor side. Why does fiscal sponsorship make sense for them? What's their why?
Yeah, so there are all sorts of fiscal sponsors out there. So let's start there. And each has its own mission. Very common types of organizations that do fiscal sponsorships are community foundations. So community foundations, their missions are really about, you know, doing social good and public good within a particular community and, you know, however that community is defined. Now, by allowing themselves to sponsor different projects in that community, they can engage in so many activities that may be beneficial to the community that go far beyond the strengths that are possessed by their internal team, right? And they're attracting all these new people who have new networks and who have new expertise and skills and perspectives and understandings. And they're bringing that into the fiscal sponsor, in this case, a community foundation in my example. And that is exciting for a fiscal sponsor, community foundation, to be able to attract all that talent, get advantage of all those networks and perspectives, be able to share resources skills and do something good for the community in furtherance of the fiscal sponsor's own mission. So that's a primary reason why fiscal sponsors engage in this activity.
Now, you alluded at the outset to different models of fiscal sponsorship. And obviously, we probably don't have time to go deep into the intricacies of each different model. But at a really high level, what are the most common models of fiscal sponsorship?
So the most common models, I'll say, because I'm not exactly sure how to rank them, but the two most common are the comprehensive or Model A fiscal sponsorship that I just described about the fiscal sponsor actually owning all of the assets and liabilities of the project. So they have to be very careful when they choose a project as well, because they're inheriting everything about that and ultimately responsible for it. And the second model that's also very common is called a pre-approved grant relationship model. So it's a little bit of a mouthful. Some people call it the Model C relationship. And that's basically where the fiscal sponsor is fundraising through its agents, which would include you who are the founder of the project. So you fundraise as an authorized agent of the fiscal sponsor fund, and you raise monies for a restricted fund that the fiscal sponsor holds. Now, the fiscal sponsor then has already pre-approved your project, which is external to the fiscal sponsor. So in this case, that's very different from the comprehensive model. The project is now housed externally, either it's yourself as an individual or an entity that you're associated with. And it grants the money that it makes, less some administrative fee that it holds back itself. So just very typically, let's say you raise $50,000 in a given year, and let's say the fiscal sponsorship fee was 10%, which is fairly common. The fiscal sponsor is going to allow you to fundraise the $50,000, which all belongs to the fiscal sponsor, but they've already pre-approved your project as a grantee, and they're going to grant out the $45,000, the 90%, to your project. And there's going to be sort of a grant agreement provisions in your fiscal sponsorship agreement that allows for the grant that's going to require some sort of reporting back to them. But it's your project. You own it. If you do something great, you own it. If you screw it up, you own that too. So,
and that's an important distinction between the Model A and the Model C.
Absolutely.
As I understand it, is that ownership of liability piece. You know, the comprehensive model, the sponsor may be more hands-on because they're owning the liability as well as the assets. The pre-approved grant relationship, as you said, you're taking that on yourself.
Right. And in the Model A, so you'll find if you're going to work with a good fiscal sponsor, and one of the things you should first check if you did, you know, pick a fiscal sponsor is to make sure that they have very good insurance.
Yes.
So that's going to be important for them. And it would be important for you as you're an agent of them when you're working on the project as well. You might be an employee of the fiscal sponsor. You're not going to be an employee of anybody else working on the project. That'll be the fiscal sponsors. Or you're going to be an independent contractor of the fiscal sponsor, but in either case, you're going to be an agent of the fiscal sponsor or a volunteer, which is also still an agent of the fiscal sponsor.
Let's talk for a minute about where to go to find a fiscal sponsor. I know that there are sites out there. There is fiscalsponsordirectory.org that provides a geographic breakdown that allows you to search for fiscal sponsors. But when you talk to groups that have decided to go this direction, where do you recommend they start? How do they find who might be a good match for them? And once they do, what do you recommend are some of the key questions to ask in that feeling out phase, that due diligence phase?
Great question. So Fiscal Sponsor Directory is actually a pretty good resource just to get a sense of who is representing themselves out there as a fiscal sponsor. It's not in any way a certification that they are all great fiscal sponsors, that they don't do that type of vetting. So it's just that these are the parties out there that are claiming that they do fiscal sponsorship. So that's just a very opening level inquiry. I think it would be a good idea to supplement that with actually talking with some organizations that might have connections with these potential fiscal sponsors. And commonly you might go to an association of nonprofits. So in California, there's a California Association of Nonprofits. The National Council of Nonprofits is kind of the national source of different associations from different states. Are members of that National Council, and they may be able to direct you to the state association, and the state association may even be able to point you out to some local associations if your project is going to really be locally focused. But you'll want to know the reputation of that potential fiscal sponsor before you enter into an agreement with them. You'll also want to know what their financial health looks like. So where fiscal sponsorship has gone most strong for particular project founders is where the fiscal sponsor eventually goes bankrupt or loses tax exemption or finds itself in the news with a terrible PR problem, a sexual harassment problem, a discrimination problem. So if you're wrapped up, you know, in the fiscal sponsor, then you're only going to be seen as good as the fiscal sponsor is. So you want to make sure that they've got healthy financials, a solid reputation, a strong board of directors, which you can often find. And for some of this information, take a look at their website, of course, ask around with knowledgeable organizations, ask a consultant like yourself, Craig, who's worked with many nonprofits and probably knows of the reputation of certain nonprofits and the experience is also a factor. So if an organization goes, I'll be your fiscal sponsor, and we've never done it before, but we'll only charge you 1%, not the 10% that, you know, this experienced fiscal sponsor is, you may be getting what you buy. So you may have not be protected by any insurance in that case. They may not understand fiscal sponsorship. They could find themselves in an audit from the AG or Attorney General or Internal Revenue Service. And then you're wrapped up in all of that as well. And perhaps you get suspended and you can't operate when they can't operate. So be careful of who you get involved with. Ask around. Look at the 990s on GuideStar, another source of information where you can get more information than just the website of an organization. But typical vetting process is really, if you're going to get involved deeply with an organization, make sure you know who you're getting involved with.
I think those are great tips, Gene. I always tell organizations, you want to go in with your eyes open. And as we talked about with fiscal sponsorship, it's essentially a contractual relationship between two parties. And so there shouldn't be hesitation to ask really challenging questions of what exactly is covered by this agreement and what's not covered. Is the sponsor going to provide bookkeeping services and insurance and all of those sort of the mechanical things that go into the administration of an organization? You want to know before you sign that agreement, what are you getting and what are they providing? And is it the same as what other fiscal sponsors that you may be considering or providing? So you're comparing apples to apples.
Yeah, I think absolutely. It's kind of like when you buy insurance too, like the insurance companies are all completely different from each other. The policies Yes. are radically different from each other. It's not kind of like, you know, everybody sells the same product. They're just very, very different. And fiscal sponsorship is the same way. Every fiscal sponsor is substantially different from others. There is, however, maybe one more resource you can look at, and that's the National Network of Fiscal Sponsors. So the National Network of Fiscal Sponsors is kind of this body of a number of fiscal sponsors that have decided to invest in this collective to ensure that they are promulgating some best practices and some self-regulation to make sure that fiscal sponsorship, if done incorrectly, could stain that type of arrangement and create laws that prohibit certain types of relationships. Well, by self-regulating the industry, if you will, they're trying to avoid that. And that's actually played out in legislative offices already. So it's something to be aware of. If people aren't promoting healthy and strong and lawful fiscal sponsorship policies and practices, this is an area that could get subject to regulation that doesn't work very well for the nonprofits involved.
Absolutely. And you did mention the fee structure. And obviously, fees are going to be different in different geographies, in different fiscal sponsors, and depending on the services they provide. But what is the typical mechanism of how are the fees calculated? What do most of the agreements look like when it comes to how the financial transaction occurs between the sponsor and the external project?
Got it. So the fees are determined usually by gross revenues. So if the project is earning $100,000 in a year, there will usually be a fee that's determined by a percentage. So I mentioned 10% being common, but that's common in maybe large urban areas where there are fairly comprehensive services that are provided and strong insurance, et cetera. The fees may be lower in more competitive atmospheres or where the services are not going to be as strong. So do shop around, but don't make the fees kind of your primary determining factor of which fiscal sponsor to go to. Apart from that, there are things that are going to increase the fees. So if a project needs special types of insurance, so, you know, the project that I want to bring to this fiscal sponsor is going to involve rock climbing for children. And then the fiscal sponsor can go, we don't really have insurance for that, but we're going to have to get that before we sponsor you. We're going to charge you the cost of that insurance because none of our other projects have that type of risk. So a little bit of a silly example, although I'm sure it exists somewhere.
No, I'm sure it exists all the time. As we wrap up, though, Gene, you know, you and I have been working in this area for a long time and have seen sort of the growth of recognition of fiscal sponsorship as a viable vehicle for organizations. What are some of the trends that you see out there in fiscal sponsorship right now?
Well, I see a growing number of organizations thinking that, oh, fiscal sponsorship is a revenue generator for them. So if there's a 10% fee or an 8% or 5% fee, whatever it is, that's new money coming to us. But they're not necessarily calculating all of the costs that are involved. So for some of the bigger fiscal sponsors, I know that even when they take a 10% administrative fee, they say if the project is like a smaller project making $50,000 a year, the money it costs to administer that project and, you know, the proportionate shares of our total insurance, et cetera, it results in a loss, a net loss for our organizations. We're doing it because it furthers our mission. So for community foundations and smaller projects, that's often the case. They'll get subsidized by the bigger projects who might negotiate a separate deal, by the way. So they might not be subject to the 10% if they're bringing in $10 million to the organization.
Correct.
And projects do vary in size from very small, like $5,000 a year.
Gene, I think Greg. I lost you there for a second.
I didn't know if you got my full answer or not.
No, I think I got you. What I'm concerned about, though, is the system crashed. So I'm hoping we didn't lose the recording.
Oh.
But Gene, I want to thank you for your time this afternoon. I really enjoyed the conversation, learning about fiscal sponsorship, and encourage everybody to reach out to you directly if they have further questions or want to learn more about your work. Gene, what's the easiest way for folks to get a hold of you?
Well, you can email me at Gene, G-E-N-E, at neolawgroup.com, neolawgroup.com.
Gene, I appreciate it. Again, this has been Nonprofit Vision with Greg Nielsen. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks so much, Greg. It was a pleasure.